It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
A vice presidential debate on the same day as a dock workers' strike, a devastating hurricane on the East Coast, and Israel being attacked with missiles not only from Iran's proxies, but from Iran itself. Well, even though Iran itself is now at war with Israel, for the longest time, their strikes have, for the most part, been through proxies such as Hamas and Hezbollah. Leading up to this latest response from Iran, the methodical, surgical, targeted destruction of one terrorist leader after another. For example, according to the New York Post, an Israeli news outlet has claimed Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah may have suffocated from toxic gases inside his secret bunker after it was demolished by an Israeli airstrike. Officials pulled Nasrallah out of the bunker on Sunday, finding his body intact with no visible wounds on him, Israelis Channel 12 reported. This suggested he was buried by rubble after 80 tons of bunker-busting bombs were dropped on his fortified hideout on Friday. The Israeli outlet claims the cave-in caused the 64-year-old to suffocate and die in agony as the room filled with fumes from the smoke and explosions. Well, it's horrible for any person to have to die like that, but many have died much worse than that at the hands of this man. I like the New York Post. Other popular news outlets, not so much. Here's how the death of Nasrallah was reported by other news organizations. I'll start with a few headlines. The AP, he was considered a pragmatist. The Washington Post, seen as a father figure. The New York Times, the man had a propensity to crack jokes. Oh, well, you didn't explain it like that. Yeah, terrorists killing people, that's funny, all right. In fact, it's hilarious. And a pragmatist? Hitler was a pragmatist, too. He made the trains run on time, and his final solution against the Jews, bloodthirsty as it may have been, was very efficient and accomplished its goal. It was pragmatic. The New York Times also said in the headline of another article, protesters mourn Nasrallah's death around the world. They called him a gifted orator who maintained that there should be one Palestine with equality for Muslims, Jews, and Christians. Radical Muslim terrorists don't believe in equality between Muslims and other religions, just for the record. I know there are individual Muslims who may believe that. The radical militant Muslims do not. And this guy specifically was an anti-Semite, a Holocaust denier. He called for the complete destruction of Israel. He ordered terrorist attacks of Jews all over the world. So now, Iran is taking revenge. They are outraged, absolutely outraged at the Israelis for having the gall to kill people who are trying to kill them. Who do those Israelis think they are? When asked if he agreed that Israel should be allowed to attack Iran's nuclear arsenal directly, Biden said no. Well, Biden has more important things on his mind, like climate change. It's an existential threat. Ladies and gentlemen, if I hear that word existential one more time, it's like people discover these words that haven't been used for a while, and then it's the only word they use. I doubt that Biden never even heard of the word existential until Democrats started using it every other sentence when talking about either climate change or the dangers of Donald Trump being president again. Take your pick. Either one is an existential threat. But back to the hurricane. For days during the devastation of Florida, Georgia, North and South Carolina, Biden did not visit these areas. He was at the beach part of the time, and Kamala, our Mamala, was campaigning on the West Coast. Donald Trump, on the other hand, was visiting the hurricane people with Franklin Graham's organization Samaritan Purse. He also talked his friend Elon Musk into setting up his internet Starlink satellite system to North Carolina. When Biden was asked by reporters while he wasn't doing more for the hurricane victims, he said, "What are you talking about? I was just on the phone for 2 hours." 2 hours on the phone? This guy's another Winston Churchill. Finally, after being shamed, Biden did visit the hurricane victims in North and South Carolina. While visiting, he had some very important things to say. He said that the nation had their back. Okay, that's good. Sure, Joe has your back. We can see where it may not have looked that way, but he also said more. Naturally, he couldn't let this go by without talking about global warming. Biden says, "No one can deny the impact of climate crisis anymore. At least I hope they don't. They must be brain dead if they do. Scientists report that with warming oceans powering more intense rains, storms like Helene are getting stronger and stronger. They're not going to get less. They're going to get stronger." My friends, the very idea of Joe Biden calling other people brain dead is a statement that speaks for itself, so I mercifully won't say any more, but this is his response to the suffering of millions and the death of hundreds. Joe, go back to the beach. And just for the record, hurricanes have been around since the beginning of existence, long before the invention of the automobile, long before man-made carbon emissions. But on that day, we also had a vice presidential debate. Now, as I said in my comments about the last debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, I've done a lot of debating myself. I don't like Monday morning quarterbacks. When you're debating, you get hit with five things at a time. You have to choose what to respond to. Often you decide to respond to a different subject later, but time goes by quickly. You forget or it doesn't come up again. Time runs out. And people in the audience are always sitting there thinking, boy, I hope he says this. Why don't you nail him with that? And I feel that way too when I'm in the audience, but when I'm up there debating, I look at it differently. So did I have frustrations? Yes, I did. But while I had my frustrations, I do not in any way blame J.D. Vance. He did a terrific job. He was polished. He had a command of the facts. People are saying this is one of the best political debates in history, and I think they're right about that. He came across as very friendly, surprising people who were seeing him for the first time instead of listening to the way MSNBC and others in the mainstream media portrayed him. Listening to MSNBC, you would think this guy wanted to round up women all over the country and chain a woman to her kitchen stove to rustle up grub for her husband. Instead, they saw a man who loved his family, spoke proudly of his wife, who also graduated Yale. Yes, she was a wife and mother, but she was so much more than that, and he was proud of her. That's the man they saw. And when abortion came up, while maintaining his own pro-life position, he showed sympathy for women who believed, albeit mistakenly, that they had no other choices. He said conservatives need to be more sensitive to this issue. It's an area where they need to grow. Now, I spoke with my fellow co-host and columnist Mike Friedenberg after the debate, and he reminded me of something, which I think we all need to be reminded of, that the pro-life community has been wonderful about helping out unwed mothers or people who cannot afford children, helping them to look into other alternatives such as adoption, taking care of them, providing if they're thinking of an abortion because of poverty, they help them come out of that situation. So that is already being done. How much Vance already understood that, I don't know. But again, even if he understood that in a debate, you say what you can in the moment. There just isn't enough time. Bottom line, he was very likable, very friendly. For a while, I thought too friendly because I wanted to see him nail Waltz. Waltz is a dangerous man, a pathological liar. One of his lies about China did come up, and at that point, the moderators were actually doing their job. They actually questioned him and followed it up when he didn't answer. But for the most part, the debate was cordial, and it was nice to see that. There was a time when you saw more of that in debates. Debates don't have to be places where you're slinging mud at each other. Waltz was more likable than he'd been in the past, up on stage waving his hands around. Nevertheless, because of his issues, because of his policies, because of his track record, because it would be dangerous to have him anywhere near the White House, I was hoping Vance would mop up the floor with him. But once it got going, I must admit, it was nice to see a civil debate. In fact, half the time while Vance was talking, Waltz was nodding in agreement. Still, I felt he was getting away with so much. We didn't hear about the riots in Minneapolis where the city was burning down and he refused to call the National Guard for days. We didn't hear about his snitch lines for people violating COVID regulations under his governorship. We didn't hear about how in his state they can operate on children with sex change. And if parents protest, the children can be removed from their custody. They didn't talk about tampons put in boys' bathrooms. For the longest time, I thought he was also getting away with the infanticide law in Minneapolis. That, however, did finally come up. Vance did a very good job, finally, of bringing that one up. It was certainly one of the moments in the debate where Waltz looked very uncomfortable, and several times he tried to deny that that was the law in Minneapolis. Vance insisted he had read the law. Finally, Waltz got out of it by saying, this was fact-checked in the last debate. Well, it was fact-checked in the last debate incorrectly. Donald Trump had brought this up, and the so-called fact-checkers in the last debate, the ABC debate, said that it was against the law to commit infanticide in the United States of America. That is not true. In Minnesota, the law says that if a child is born as a result of a botched up abortion, the doctor is under no legal obligation to keep the child alive. And some babies have died in those situations. So yeah, Waltz mentioned it was fact checked in the last debate. The CBS moderators didn't bother to correct him, possibly because they themselves do not know the facts. Of course, at another time in the debate, they acted like they knew all kinds of facts when they tried to correct Vance about the Haitian immigration situation. This, after they had promised ahead of time not to fact-check anyone. Vance didn't let them get away with it. He was cool, he was collected, but he did correct them. And while he was explaining the truth with actual information, they cut his mic. Yeah, they cut his mic. Why not? He was calling them out. They must have felt like fools. He was correcting them with truth and backing it up with information. Well, we can't have that. Cut the mic. Now, I want to be fair. I want to be fair to the CBS moderators. They at least kept half of their promise about not fact-checking. They never fact-checked Waltz. And Waltz was telling so many lies, you'd think he was auditioning to become Pinocchio's understudy at a new movie remake. He lied again about Project 2025. He lied again about Trump's position on abortion, saying that Trump wanted to have a national ban on abortion. He went out of his way to mention that Donald Trump is unfit to be president because we need to go to a new generation, and Trump is nearly 80 years old. Well, Biden's way more than 80 years old. And of course, age doesn't really have anything to do with it. But in Biden's case, he also has dementia. That's very apparent. And yet Kamala swore up and down that Biden was up to the job until a debate showed otherwise. And even then, while they replaced him on the ticket, they did not ask him to step down from the White House. So they're going to complain that Trump isn't fit to be president because he's nearly 80 years old. Now, one place where he did get hit hard, and I thought Vance did a very good job here, although a lot of people claim it was the weakest part of the debate. They were asking him whether he and Trump would accept the election results because they didn't accept them, and they brought up January 6th. He reminded them that for the entire 4 years Trump had been in office, Hillary was not accepting the election results, that people were claiming it was stolen by Russia. Democrats never accept election results. They have a history of not accepting election results. If you're a Republican and you want to double check the election, you're an election denier. If you're a Democrat and you want to double check the election, you believe in democracy. So anyway, Vance did a really good job, particularly when he was talking about the economy and the borders. He did a very, very good job. I would have liked to have seen Waltz get nailed more, but Waltz did get nailed. And again, I was feeling so sorry for Waltz. Who knows, if I was up there, I may not have wanted to take off the gloves either. Apparently, though, some of this, maybe even all of this, at least a large part of this, was a strategy. Somebody had told Vance about his reputation with women, with independents. He was told to be kinder, gentler, more empathetic. He did that, and it worked. Regardless of how I felt, he wasn't reaching out for people like me who were already going to vote for him. He was reaching out to the independents and the undecided women. By consensus, even from the mainstream media, he won the debate. That's wonderful news. I'm grateful, but it is sad that these so-called independents are deciding things for us. The country's almost in a 50-50 split. We're practically two nations. You could not have a greater difference between Democrat and Republican philosophy, between liberal and conservative philosophy. Who doesn't know their position on abortion, infanticide, defunding the police, open borders, completely eliminating our energy, taking away our cars, our air conditioning, telling us what foods we have to eat, kissing the butts of dictators all over the world. Who doesn't know how they feel about this kind of stuff? Redistribution of wealth, the destruction of capitalism, calling for our First Amendment to be done away with, stacking the Supreme Court or doing away with the Supreme Court. Some even calling for the doing away of the Constitution. This is coming out of the mouths of Democrats. Who doesn't know how they feel about this stuff? And instead, people are saying, well, gee, I'm just not sure, but I'm going to watch this debate. Oh, he smiled a lot. He was friendly. Oh, he looked more presidential. Oh, this guy got angry too much. And you used to hear me say, as kind of a joke, as kind of an exaggeration, that there are people who make their decisions based on somebody's tie. Well, it was actually all over the internet this time, the fact that Vance was wearing a pink tie. That concerned people. Okay, it didn't matter. Vance won the debate. Once again, I'm very glad he won the debate. But we have ignorant people, just a small margin of very ignorant, fickle people deciding the election for us. My friends, this is chilling. And this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
It was late in the debate, when Governor Walz, for the 84,000th time, brought up January 6th and mentioned that Trump was a threat to democracy. And Vance said the real threat to democracy, and this was a great moment for Vance, he said the real threat to democracy was the elimination of free speech. And he particularly talked about social media and Kamala Harris's concerns about social media. We've heard those comments echoed by Hillary Clinton lately, how we need to crack down on social media and not allow disinformation. And Vance brought up the fact that Tim Walz was on record as saying that the First Amendment does not protect hate speech. Walz defended himself, of course, with that tired question, is it wrong to yell fire in a crowded room? I have a good answer for that. It all depends on whether or not there's a fire. But recently, John Kerry, former presidential candidate against George Bush, was in the news for making similar comments. Now, you remember John Kerry. Did you know he served in Vietnam? He told us quite a bit. His stories about his Vietnam record had more performances than My Fair Lady. I served in Vietnam. As a matter of fact, I did two tours in Vietnam. Well, I have another quotation from Kerry. As you know, he really got into climate change these last few years, flying around the world in his private jet to talk about the dangers of emissions. I'm going to read a quotation from him. Don't worry, I won't do it in his voice. It would put you to sleep. But here's what he said. And he was talking to an audience, a question from the audience about climate misinformation, quote unquote. He, along with so many other Democrat politicians these days, described how it's social media making it difficult to form what he called consensus, and he blamed it on the First Amendment. Here's his quotation. But look, if people go to only one source, and the source they go to is sick and has an agenda, and they're putting out disinformation, our First Amendment stands as a major block to the ability to be able to hammer it out of existence. What we need is to win the ground, win the right to govern by hopefully winning enough votes that you're free to be able to implement change. What he means is, if the Democrats could get into complete power, they could do away with the First Amendment. They may not actually call it that, but they would at least seriously curtail it. Mr. Kerry, you should be grateful for the First Amendment because it even protects a blithering idiot like yourself from saying something so incredibly stupid. Even that moronic comment you just made is protected by the First Amendment. So be careful, sir, what you wish for. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connor's strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, Bob. It's been a crazy, crazy week in the news.
Wow. Left and right. If only Mike were here to tell us what a news week is. Now, you said somebody just called us listening all the way from Florida.
That
sometimes
is correct.
We forget that even though we're a local show, they do stream.
Exactly.
It does. I know the technology's there. It does make me wonder how someone in Florida heard of us. Maybe he lived in San Diego once.
Yes, but exactly. I mentioned to you while we were doing the monologues earlier that I believe there's a lot of people, and I definitely know of two that have called on other shows. They'll say like, oh, I used to live in San Diego. That's how I've heard of this.
Yeah.
And they keep listening to us. Yeah, but there was a caller from Florida who wanted to report that he was safe currently. And he also mentioned that he was in the eye of the storm. As far as I saw the reports, it wasn't supposed to hit till Monday. And I know over there it's like 9:30.
Well, Florida was one of the states hit by the previous hurricane.
Yes.
So maybe he meant last week he had been in the eye of the storm, or do you think he's projecting ahead saying he's going to be?
Possibly.
This new storm hasn't hit yet, so he either means he's in the trajectory, they think.
Yes.
Of the eye of the storm coming, or he had been in the previous
one. I will say,
we don't really know.
His reception was very windy in the background, so it sounds like it's slowly making its process, the hurricane. And I was going to report the story super quick, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So we're talking about Hurricane Milton is the next hurricane.
Yeah.
So this previous hurricane, it was Hurricane Irene.
Irene. They always switch off male and female.
Exactly, yes. I remember Hurricane Brendan.
But I wonder if Hurricane Irene identifies with being a male. Hurricane.
I was going to say, when I look up to see what my hurricane was like, it says it's one of the deadliest ones. I was like, oh, I regret my name now 100%. I got to be called something else. Hurricane Bob doesn't sound as bad now.
Well, nothing Bob sounds as bad.
Bob the Builder.
There you go.
So Hurricane Milton is this next one. It hasn't gone into a hurricane just yet.
They're expecting Wednesday, last I heard.
Exactly, yes. So currently, they're also predicting, too, they're supposed to get 85 mile per hour gusts of winds from this hurricane upon the research done by the National Weather Service, I'm going to say, but I cannot remember specifically which. There's this particular branch of the National Weather Service that specifically deals with hurricanes. They mention how building damages occur at 60 miles per hour. So we're going at 25 miles per hour above the damage point for buildings. So we are expecting.
Yeah, and
some
this is
going
to be category 3. The last one was category 4. But
yes.
I bet category 3 is plenty of damage.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Can you just imagine how many, and putting aside the horrible tragedies of loved ones lost and they're still uncovering bodies, but even the people that survived with their lives, their houses are destroyed, their businesses are destroyed.
Yep.
It's just devastating. It's very difficult for people that haven't gone through that to imagine it.
Totally. And then not to mention the fact that I'm still seeing more and more reports of the death toll getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then also seeing social media videos posting of people there, what their houses look like after the hurricane or how their city looks like. It is extremely rough.
Well, now there is some good news. Mm-hmm. Everybody that's been tended to by the Biden administration is happy and is doing well, and they are right on top of this. They have done a great job. Now, how do we know this? Because Biden told us that himself. And you can take that to the bank.
How long did it take George Bush to show up during that 2001?
He flew over it a day or so later, but then they complained he was flying over it.
A day or so.
And they acted like he had caused it.
Yes.
They acted like he went into a lab and put some chemicals together. And then when Biden gets out there, of course, we talked about this in the monologue, he gives this sermon about global warming. And then we find out that a lot of the funds that were going to be used to help these people have been used for illegal aliens.
Exactly.
Not to mention the billions that we give to Iran and Ukraine and just all around the globe.
So one thing I also want to mention too, I can't remember if you said it in your monologue, but what I was trying to get to was the fact that since it took him only a day or two, Biden, it took 4 days. He was at a beach resort the entire time.
But Brandon, he said he was on the phone for a couple of hours.
For a couple of hours.
Yeah. So
what is, if Donald Trump was president, he'd be there in a millisecond. Well,
it gets even worse. And then even when the private sector went in to do what the government wouldn't, the government was going in there and telling them you're not allowed to go in here without permission.
Mm-hmm.
This thing just smells.
And the number one thing that made me the most upset about this last hurricane is not the fact that we were trying to worry about the safety of people, not trying to worry about the funding that we can help by donating to these relief causes for the hurricanes. But the matter of fact, all these pundits were on there, well, this is due to global warming, everybody. If we kept warming the planet, the stronger the hurricanes are. That's not how this works at all. Where's the
science? We've had hurricanes ever since we've had human existence, and horrible as these hurricanes are, and I don't want to downplay that,
yes,
we have had worse hurricanes. The worst one on record that I know of was in the 1900s, as far as America goes, the Galveston hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
That's before the invention of the automobile, or at least before everybody was driving one. There might have been a few crude additions.
And I would have also said New Orleans, and that's down to the fact that the infrastructure in New Orleans was really, really bad.
Yeah, well, the problem with Katrina was the levees. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. So luckily, Florida's becoming a little bit more prepared for this situation. Especially,
well, they've got a good governor.
Yes, that too. Yes, and they've already mentioned how a lot of schools have been closed for the entire week because they're expecting this hurricane to go through Florida for the next 5 days or so.
I really feel bad for North Carolina, because they were not expecting to get the brunt of it. We kept hearing about Florida and the Gulf Coast, and then it kind of pivoted.
Tennessee got hit too pretty hard too, is what I heard, and I see in the videos too.
Yeah, so they did.
Yeah,
but I think North Carolina, I mean, we don't want to downplay what happened anywhere, but I think North Carolina got hit the most.
Yeah, so I really do hope our hearts and prayers go out to everyone out there. I did hear Kamala Harris. She made some comments about this. Did you want to hear what she had to say?
Oh, I always want to hear what she had to say.
All right, let's take a listen.
I grew up a middle-class kid. My mother was hardworking. She raised me and my sister, Maya. She saved up. And it was only by the time I was a teenager that she could afford to actually buy her first home.
Was she really saying that about the hurricane?
No. That was satirical.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
We have a hurricane, and hurricanes are horrific, as in the word hurricane, because when a hurricane comes, it really comes strongly, and we together experience the hurricane because we all know communally that a hurricane was here.
Yes, exactly. All those word salads and all those croutons on top of that. So let's talk about a few different stories that I have for you tonight. And then I have not one, not two, but three movie reviews. Exactly, because I got a lot done in 1 month in that time period. So I'm going to start with international news. China's stock market. I don't know if you've been noticing the international stock markets, but man, China's market is just booming out of nowhere.
No, I had not heard about this. Is it because they're hoping and counting on Biden winning?
No, they say that this is waiting for Beijing to back up its stimulus pledges with real money, by many financial analysts are continually to be skeptical, meaning that this is all done through the internet money, or as we like to call bitcoins.
Okay, so it's more the international market, not so much the Chinese market. Well, in that case, they probably wouldn't want Biden to win.
I'm just trying to figure out, even financial analysts, the big ones, Bloomberg, China's very own Investo, it's an investment company from China. They're even skeptical about how this whole economic boom's going on. Because again, we talked about every economic policy. Whenever there's a cause, there's got to be an effect to everything. So Chinese shares have skyrocketed since late September as a barrage of economic, financial, and market support measures reinvigorated investor confidence. The Hang Seng China Enterprises Index, which compromises Chinese stocks listed in Hong Kong, has jumped more than 30% over the past month, making it the best performer among more than 90 global equity gauges tracked by Bloomberg. Stimulus announced by Beijing has included interest rate cuts, freeing up cash of banks, billions of dollars of liquidity support for stocks, and a vow to end the long-term slide in property prices. So it sounds like a lot of good things, but again, every cause has an effect with it, too. The surge has reassert that their influence over our broader emerging market gauges and dented the performance of fund managers who had been running underweight positions in the biggest developing nation economy. The durability, the rebound will not only matter for the year-end performance of index tracking funds, but also the direct implications for nations that have trading and investment links with China. And then lastly, Invesco made a public statement saying, these are a group of stocks whose shares prices are 30 to 40% and almost at a historical highs. Whether in the next 12 months the fundamentals will be as good before their peak, there are more uncertain to that. That would be the category that they would like to trim. So in other words, they're saying that, yeah, it looks great, but don't invest in our markets at all right now. This is way too expensive to invest into this part.
I am no economist. I would never pretend to be. I do know that that's an evil empire running China. So it sounds very nefarious to me, just a gut level reaction.
And not only that, but the stock market, keep in mind, that's just the stock market itself. How many billions and billions of dollars in debt is China in still currently as a government spending?
Well, and
I know it's not as bad as America.
How many dollars in debt are we to China? We are beholden to China in our debt.
Yes. So I am skeptical as well. Again, I don't trust Bitcoin or any of these electronic markets as much as I could throw my phone across the room, basically. I hate when my friends say, oh, you should invest in that. No, I don't, because it's too risky of an investment to begin with. And all you people that made money on it, great. That's fantastic. But keep me out of it. I don't want to deal with it. I am going to deal with my own stock market here in America. America-made companies, America-made products. I'm going to focus on those things, not anything in the foreign markets, especially China, especially.
Well, especially with this push toward a one-world government and international law, it's not a good thing.
No. And lastly, I wanted to mention, too, Biden administration is trying to introduce a bill which would get rid of Chinese software inside cars at this point. They included Russia as well. One company that's going to be hurt by this is Volvo. They've mentioned that their software system comes directly from Beijing, China.
Oh, okay. I didn't think Biden would ever stand up to China about anything.
Here we are, So as for if this law will ever be passed, especially under his administration right now, this upcoming election coming up, I doubt it. Do I think Trump will make this an official law possibly when he gets in the office? Yes. And Trump will take credit for it. And that's fine with me, because Biden did the same thing, like, oh, I got us out of COVID. I did all of this. It's all my doing.
Oh, yeah. The vaccine was, I'm not a big fan of the vaccine, but the vaccine was developed under Trump.
Trump's administration
tried to take credit. Of course, they were saying before Biden won the election, everybody in the Democratic Party was saying, there's no way I'm taking that vaccine. Then after Biden wins and takes credit for it, along with landing on the moon, signing the Declaration of Independence, he tries to make it against the law to not take the vaccine. So
you know what, Biden? Take what you will, because you're going to be out in about 1 month, and we're going to be a much, much better country because of it.
If he lasts that long, he looks like he could keel over at any time.
It's true.
So maybe Kamala will be president for 1 month or two, no matter what. Maybe so.
Don't think that, please. My next story I wanted to get to, we had a debate this past Thursday, and I'm not talking about the vice president of a debate, because that happened on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think a lot of us follow national politics a lot, but I know you follow local politics,
so that's very good. Yeah, so we had the mayor debate between Todd Gloria and Larry Turner. This is their second one. They had a previous one the week prior on Tuesday, so that would have been September 23rd.
And you're rooting for the 24th. Challenger,
Of course.
How's the challenger doing in the poll?
Oh, in the polls? It's not doing well.
So Gloria is going to win this thing.
Gloria looks like he's definitely going to win. And
well, of course, nobody has to show ID anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I mean, they never had but at least some counties could make the decision for themselves.
Now it's
against the law to even ask for it in any county.
Yeah, California, Wisconsin have some of the worst voting laws.
Thanks to Nebuchadnezzar.
Thank you. So the mayor debate, what I've been seeing, the first one, I want to say, like, again, they both spoke actually pretty decently, but in terms of who I prefer their policies with, I have to go with Larry Turner easily. It's just that, unfortunately, Larry Turner, the way he presented his ideas wasn't very well put out, unfortunately.
So this was one of those cases where the person whose information was bad was the better debater?
Exactly.
That's always very unfortunate.
Yeah. Their first debate was on ABC 10, and the second debate here happened to be on KPBS. Very, very liberal networks, mind you.
Yes.
Like, so they were very much attacking Larry Turner's personal. And I thought Larry Turner.
Were they doing the fact checking from the moderators again?
I cannot confirm or deny it. And it just drives me crazy because we talked about this. Moderators are there to just keep track of time.
Just keep track of the time. It's not your moment. It's not supposed to be about them.
Yeah, but every time it seemed like the moderators just wanted to interrupt and say, but Larry Turner, you said this and your policies don't make sense when Gloria's policy actually does make sense. And Larry Turner looked like a deer in headlights trying to figure out, I try to explain it very well. This last Thursday for KPBS, they mostly focused on the homeless issue that's going on in San Diego. Turner's idea was saying, like, we gave him the 1,000-bed shelter and we're going to be opening up that very soon. What more can we ask for right now? Because we barely have the infrastructure. We have other things to focus on first before the homelessness issue. And Todd Gloria goes, you know, there are other things we could try and I'm going to be willing to push those things through us. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, why didn't you do that earlier, Gloria? If you have all these ideas stuck in your head.
Well, it sounds like Kamala Harris, what she's going to do on day one when day one was 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and when are you going to implement all those changes, Kamala? But no, you're just sitting there wasting our time, wasting our tax dollars as usual. The only thing else I wanted to mention too about this debate, Turner gave the usual, listen, I'd rather not be here at this debate. I'd rather go out and do change. And that was, again, my one thing I do like about these debates is when they're like, okay, so you stated that this debate, you're not really into it right now, but you want to make the changes. How do you implement those changes? How do you execute it? Of course, Trump has proof. He has evidence to help back this up. Turner is just a brand new independent candidate that came out of the blue, out of nowhere. He has talked about his volunteer work in the past. But again, I need a lot more than that. I need the actual political evidence that you made a change. I don't mind the volunteer work. I don't mind you pushing out different policy ideas out there. But there's got to be more to your campaign than just those things. And the homeless issue, I wanted to actually go ahead and transition into this quick story here too. California Governor Gavin Newsom has approved a $130.7 million bill Friday to clear homeless encampments across the state. Now, this is going to be part of the Encampment Resolution Fund. Only the money that's going to the 18 different communities, they have to accept it under certain requirements. Recipients adhere to all state housing and homeless laws and remain in compliance with their pre-established housing plans. Failing to do so will result in a loss of funding or potentially further consequences. California's Housing Accountability Unit will aid in the enforcement. One of the things I wanted to point out was how much money everyone's going to get here. So the highest amount of money going to any other place in California is actually Riverside. They're going to get $12,612,779. The reason why I bring this up is because I did some research to find out how bad's the homelessness issue going around in every city. Riverside specifically has 3,725, which is 0.01% of its population. The second highest would be Los Angeles at 0.02. They reported they have 75,312. And that's completely fine. The amount of money they're asking for is $11,351,281. Seems fair enough. But there's some communities on here I'm thinking, how much money do you really need in order to fix your issue when your numbers are so low? One of the big ones here is Carlsbad, local here in San Diego. They've reported they only have 112 homeless people, and they are asking for $3 million to fix that issue. That seems like a big chunk, and $3 million to build a shelter.
How does that really fix this?
The one that surprised me, I'm not sure how you pronounce the city, Antioch?
Antioch, yeah.
Antioch. Do you know how big their homelessness is compared to their population? It's 3%. 3% of their population. That is huge. And I know that the city is very small. They only have 2,843 homeless people there. And so 3% of that, and it's a small community, but that is.
But it's proportionate.
That's to big the population. So they're asking for about $7 million. And again, that seems fair enough to me to build a shelter or to build many shelters for that high amount of population. But again, Carlsbad is asking for that much. One that I don't believe for a millisecond, San Francisco. They announced that they had only 8,000 people that were homeless in San Francisco. I don't believe it for the amount of people that complain about the infrastructure in San Francisco and the amount of dirtiness and uncleanliness.
Maybe it's become such a horrible city that even the homeless don't want to be there anymore.
Possibly, because I noticed San Jose's on here, too.
That's my hometown.
Yeah, so. They have 9,903 homeless people, according to their counts they have, which is 0.01%. But that's still a huge chunk of people that are homeless over there. San Jose is going to get $4 million. I don't think $4 million buys you a two-bedroom house in that community. It is so expensive to live there. So you're only asking for $4 million to fix this homeless issue? This is just a Band-Aid, honestly. we're wasting our dollars again and being a band-aid for the homeless issue that we have. I get there's some people that decide to be homeless because it's much cheaper to deal with that than having to pay directly to the government that we have. And gosh, housing is just so expensive as it is. But still, there's got to be better issues to this than just building shelters and wasting, I shouldn't say wasting, but giving this large amount of money and very improportionate to how the homeless issue is dealing with. And by the way, I want to also point out San Diego is not one of those communities that wanted this at all. I don't know whether we're more focused on the mayor run or we're focused on other issues in San Diego, but we didn't ask for a penny from this fund. And I'm guessing also it has to do with something about we don't want to follow the policies the state government has on homelessness too. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Well, once you
take
money, then you have to follow their policies. Exactly. So that could be the problem.
And I think that's what's going on. I think there's some background iffiness on how this homelessness issue wants to be run in San Diego. And I want to dig a little deeper into that and figure out why exactly we didn't want to do this. Because it seemed like if we get some extra funding, we can actually buy out some other buildings, or there's plenty of empty spaces out there in San Diego to help with this issue. But I don't know. Something to sink your teeth into. So I was going to do a little commercial break in between, but we are running kind of late.
Okay, so just plow on ahead.
I will. We are going to be talking about a few movies I got to watch over the month. So first movie I'm going to start off with is God's Not Dead and God We Trust. This is the fourth movie in the series.
The fourth God's Not Dead movie. I saw one and two. I never saw three or the one you're talking about.
Yeah, so one and
two. I
know
you didn't like one. Do you think they're getting better?
No, I'll say this. I liked one more than two because two just wasted my time by saying, wait a second, you said Jesus in a historical context. Therefore, you're allowed to teach that. And I'm like, I was shouting at the screen saying, I knew that the whole time. I told you this 5 minutes into the movie. So that was my biggest gripe with the movie there. Otherwise, it was a pretty boring court drama film. And then this third one, I loved the third one. I mean, from top to bottom, and I'm surprised so many people hated it. This one deals with your personal issue of dealing whether to continue to love in God or not, because a huge tragedy strikes David A.R.
White's somebody wondering why God's allowing suffering in
exactly.
their lives.
Exactly. Yeah. So in this case, David A.R. White's character, the pastor, I can't remember his name, you know that African pastor that was traveling back and forth from Africa
right.
to America?
Right, was in the previous movie.
So in the third one, he passes away due to a complete accident done by a teenager, so he has to forgive himself in order to understand his side of the situation, because it was a complete accident that this happens. And so dealing with that personal tragedy, his brother is in town, and his brother is a fantastic character because his brother is an atheist in the movie, and he's not trying to convince his brother because he's like, listen, I'm never going to convince you that God's real to you. And I'm like, thank you, because you can't just talk to somebody in a debate very quickly. Oh, guess what? Now I believe. There's a lot more that goes into actually believing in God, especially when the rapture comes about. You can't just say, oh, I believe in God, please take me up now. There's a lot more that goes into that. And God knows that for sure, more than anybody else for that matter, too. So in this fourth one, a senator is running for office, and unfortunately he passes away. So David A.R. White's character is going to be running instead in his place. So we're doing a lot of political drama. I was shocked to see that the guy who was in the second movie, he was suing the homeschooling group, Ray Wise was the actor's name. He's back in this movie. And not only that, but we have Superman himself, Dean Cain, coming back into this movie too.
Dean Cain's in a lot of Christian films.
I know, but I thought we ended his story just like he just up and left
his
old
mother. Oh, is he playing
mother.
That same character that he played
character.
In the very first movie? Yeah, wasn't he insensitive to his girlfriend?
Yeah, his girlfriend said, hey, I got cancer. And he goes, this couldn't wait till after my business performance.
I know, that was... I thought that was... I did like that movie more than you, but I do agree that that was the weakest part of that movie, because even somebody that's that into himself will usually be tactful enough to not say it so openly.
But he's back in the movie, and once again, they are playing it so over the top. And again, I love David A.R. White. I think he's a really good actor, so the performances are all really good. Not to mention the filmmaking, just on a production level. They have some like dolly shots, they have some really nice sceneries, the staging of everything. It's fantastic. This is my
so on a
best.
Scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate this movie?
Overall, I actually have to give it a 4, to be honest. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, here's the thing. The story is so predictable from beginning to end. Yeah. All the characters are very flat, and the music's so cliched with the swing of the orchestras and stuff. And it's a shame to give that one, because I really do think that we could have done something. But honestly, I think it's time to wrap it up. I think we should stop with God's Not Dead. 4 movies is quite enough.
It's time for, okay, we get it. He's not dead.
Yes,
he's alive. alive.
And then very quickly, because we do have a couple more minutes, I did want to quickly talk about Reagan. I did talk about it on Gun Owners Radio.
What did you think of it?
I liked it. Once again, my biggest complaint was I felt that story was really rushed. It felt like bullet points.
It should have been. I felt it should have been a mini series. Yes. I would have liked to have seen them take more time.
If you would like, I would also suggest Reagan, the documentary made about a year before.
Yeah.
Very, very more well into details on why he made certain policies.
Now, considering the constraints they had to make it just a couple of hours, I thought they did a good job, but it would have made a great miniseries.
I agree. And then one last thing I also want to say, Dan Loria, he plays Tip O'Neill in the movie. I thought those two were fantastic together.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more of the Tip O'Neill character. And I don't know if our people recognize the name Dan Loria. He was the dad in The Wonder Years.
Yes, exactly.
Very different kind of character in this, which shows his acting range.
No, yeah. And I think he did really, really well. My biggest complaint is that, again, there's no real chemistry with a lot of the characters since it's going so fast and you got to get through it all this time. And then lastly, I also wanted to mention the amount of makeup on John Voight and Dennis Quaid at the very beginning of the movie. I mean, geez Louise, that is a lot of makeup to make him look young. Just
piece of trivia, the actress who played Nancy Reagan,
yes,
she was in Kindergarten Cop as the kindergarten teacher that fell in love with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I knew she looked familiar. Yeah. So overall, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Again, I would recommend it to people. But again, do I think this is the most impressive movie that is about Reagan out there? Absolutely not. There's some other ones that you could find out there that are a little bit better. But this wasn't bad. I don't get all the complaints or calling it the worst movie of the year.
The complaints are it has a conservative message and they're showing it during an election. And Dennis Quaid is a great actor.
He does a really good Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, he doesn't look like Reagan, but that shows how good his acting is. And I love the line, and it was a real line, when Reagan's in the hospital. He says, "I hope you're all Republicans," to the doctors. That was historically an accurate line. Can you imagine somebody keeping his sense of humor at a time like that?
Right, right. Well, thank you again, Bob, for this wonderful night.
Brendan, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you. I'll have to save my other movie review for later, everybody. So edge of your seats now.
Okay.